Here we go. It is the Chris Collinsworth podcast starring Richard Sherman and presented by our good friends at DraftKings. They're our new sponsor. They couldn't be better friends. So thank you very much to DraftKings. We're going to talk about Dak Prescott. Of course, that was awful. Everybody loves Dak Prescott, one of the great guys in the league, and what that means for him, for his career, for his contract. Richard has all kinds of opinions about that. And he also had some pretty strong opinions on what is going on with Carolina. Start out 0-2, go 3-0 since then without Christian McCaffrey. How is that possible? Are they playing better without McCaffrey? It is a very interesting discussion indeed. And finally, Richard had some pretty strong takes on the new world champion Los Angeles Lakers. Who is the greatest player of all time? He didn't want to answer the question. I badgered it out of him. Was it Michael Jordan? Was it LeBron James? Was it Kobe Bryant? Wait till you hear this discussion. It is really good. And then last but certainly not least, our dear friend Al Michaels insisted on coming on the podcast to do the pick segment with George Shahuri. Every week we come on, and of course DraftKings gives us all the ability now to go out and figure out who we like in the games coming up this weekend. And of course, if you know Al at all, it all devolved into a little bit of story time telling, and we had a blast. Do you believe in miracles? If you want to hear some inside details as to what happened with the 1980 Olympic hockey team, this is the place to be right here. Let's get going. All right, time to rock and roll one more time with Richard Sherman. And every time you come on the show, Richard, you're in a new spot. You got the pergola out back there. You got the beautiful trees. You got the sunshine of California. Where are you? Is that home?
Yeah, this is my home in California. We're in the backyard. The kids are here, so it's kind of tough to get quiet in that house. But I like to show you a different bit of California too. You know, all you got to see is a hotel room last time.
Oh, don't remind me of that hotel room. That was never mind. I'm not even getting started on all that again. Well, let's get right into it. This was a newsy kind of week this week in the National Football League. And you got to start at the top, right? Dak getting injured, and it's so rough. You and I both have been through contract situations. It's a brutal business. You know, you have a chance to go for a long-term guaranteed deal. It's not as much money as you maybe want, but you could sign something that's guaranteed over a longer period of time. Dak doesn't sign that contract. He was on the, you know, he was tagged. Just from a player standpoint, you know, we all felt so badly. He's such a good guy. You know, he's just a great human being, Dak Prescott is. When you heard it or you saw it for the first time, what were you thinking?
I felt terrible for him. You know, I mean, as a player, you see, you know, his production, everything he's done over the years. And you know, you see what other quarterbacks are getting, and you understand why he isn't accepting the deal that was being offered. And then you always see the side where the fans, you know, and you know, that's one thing players never understand is the side the fans take, you know, but they're always with the logo. You know, players are greedy. Players, oh man, take what you can get. You know, that's like, oh, why are you doing this? And it's like, fans never take a step back, you know, away from the organization and say, hey, this player has worked his whole life for this. This is one opportunity to have life-changing money. Why wouldn't he try to maximize it? And so you just feel sick for him. You know, you feel sick because he was having a freaking record-setting season. You know, 500 yards, 470, 450. You know, having a season of his life. You know, and really going to show everybody he deserved not only the money that he was getting, but probably more. And to see him injured like that, man, it's just beyond hate to see it. I'm sick to my stomach for him.
Well, speaking of more money, I think it's time for you to go in and ask for a raise. I watched the tape of the 49ers last week. Oh, my goodness. Now, I know you guys are thin at the quarterback position, right? I mean, that was – I think you're about four cornerbacks down, and even the guys that are playing a little bit wounded at this point. But That game was rough. It was from the cornerback position. Brian Allen tried to come in off the practice squad or whatever. And man, every single time he got in man coverage, they threw a deep ball on him and they were completing him. Jimmy Garoppolo tried to come back from the bad ankle. When he wasn't on his back, he was throwing it in the dirt. And then C.J. Beathard came in and it just wasn't any better. That was a rough day for the 49ers out there. A little bit of a stunner.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a perfect storm of things going bad. You know, it's unfortunate. You know, Brian Allen was kind of put in a tough position. Didn't get enough days of practice. Didn't get enough reps to be adequately prepared, unfortunately. And you know, that's no fault of his own. You know, there were some situations going on that prevented that. And then, you know, obviously Jimmy trying to fight through an injury. It's always tough to get back. You know, Miami did a great job putting pressure on him and you know, hitting him every chance they got. And yeah, you know, it was just perfect storm of bad things. Obviously Fitz is hot and cold, you know, but you got good Fitz that day and he played well, found a matchup he liked and went after it. And so, you know, it's one of those things. It happens in the league. You know, it's just unfortunate. It was the perfect storm of events. But I look forward to seeing Jimmy, you know, and those guys bounce back. And obviously we get healthier in the secondary. Emmanuel Mosley's coming back this week. So you know, hopefully that'll shore things up. But you'll be back out there to see it.
It's going to be awesome. Hey, we also got the Las Vegas Raiders. I'm so happy I didn't say the O word. The Las Vegas Raiders knocking off the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City. And if there was ever a team that maybe took a little page out of the playbook for the Kansas City Chiefs, went out and got some speed on that football team, right?
Right.
Go get Henry Ruggs. They had their choice, any receiver they want at that point in the draft. And now they are starting to throw the deep ball with Derek Carr, which we had not really seen much of in the past. Is this a new day coming now that they've moved out to the desert?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it. You know, I mean, Derek's playing with a tremendous amount of confidence. Their defense is playing surprisingly well, very opportunistic, you know, made some huge plays in that game. Few key turnovers, put the offense in really great scoring position. But those games against Kansas City have always been shootouts in that division. Kansas City and the Raiders have always, you know, had shootouts. It's always been high scoring, and the Raiders have had a chance to win, usually in the last drive. So it's good to see them be able to pull it out. You know, that's great for the confidence of the team, confidence of Derek Carr, and they're really young everywhere. You know, Darren Waller is playing fantastic at tight end spot, and they're only getting better. I saw Jason Witten get a touchdown the other day. They're doing it all.
If he can come out of the booth, I can come out of the booth, man. That's my next shot. There you go. You know, we were just talking about it, and some of the rumors already starting a little bit that – Eric Bieniemy now is probably sort of top of the list, or at least I would hope top of the list. He should have been top of the list last year, and nobody believed me, but so he didn't get a job. And he's the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs and world champions and all that kind of stuff. But you start to look around, and there's a team or two that'll be looking for a coach now, but one in particular probably sticks out to you is where this might really work.
Yeah, like we talked about before, I think that the Houston Texans is exactly where very dynamic quarterback, great outside zone running team, inside zone, you know, big time playmakers on the defensive side. They're going to be cash strapped for a few years, you know, based on, you know, GM Bill O'Brien, you know, who we talked about on the last episode. But I think that that's a huge opportunity for him. You know, I just hope that these teams don't make the same mistakes that teams in the past have made, you know, and say, hey, well, it doesn't matter about his track record or what he's done. He's not the play caller
or whatever.
Right. He's a friend of a friend, or he's part of this tree, or he's this, you know, and I don't think teams have had success with those guys. You know, I think Bieniemy should have been chosen a long time ago. You know, there's been guys that have been, you know, better candidates, and they haven't gotten picked, and that's why you got these teams 0-5, and you know, both teams in New York are 0-5, and you know, you got Detroit struggling, you know, ever since Caldwell left. They were 9-7 when he left, and I don't think they've won 11 games since. And you know, that's where you look up and you're like, you know, maybe the system, maybe the way they're choosing these coaches needs to change.
Yeah. You chose a different team. Your old team, I got a chance to watch the other night, and it was a wild game. I mean, it was just a wild game. In the first half, I think everybody was watching the Lakers game, and that's all right. Don't worry about it. Don't worry, you're killing our ratings, but that's okay. So then the second half just got crazy. I mean, Seattle couldn't have looked any worse, really, on offense for the first half of that game. And then they come out in the second half and just start flying up and down the field, getting turnovers, making plays. And then there was a decision at the end of that game. Mike Zimmer had the ball on about the 5 or 6 yard line. It's 4th and 1. He's got a 5-point lead. If he kicks a field goal, he's going to have an 8-point lead. Instead, he tries to go for it. And it was a very close decision. The mathematics skewed slightly in favor of Zimmer being correct in going for it on 4th and 1. And yet, if he kicks that field goal, he's going to have an 8-point lead and force Russ to not only go score a touchdown and also get the 2-point conversion. But the kickoff likely would have put the ball at the 25-yard line instead of at the 5-yard line. So now you just applied as the head coach to the Minnesota Vikings. They have decided to pay you $20 million per year to leave your podcast career and your playing career. What would you have done, Coach Sherman, in that situation?
You know, obviously hindsight's 2020, so it's kind of unfair, but I'll take it. I would have kicked the field goal. Just make them walk the ball down the field. You know, you stay on top, you play defense, you make them walk the ball. You make him, you know, not take chunk plays, make him take 5-6 yard plays, keep everything in front of you, waste the clock, you know, and see if they can make enough plays, wait till they make a mistake. You know, I was talking about this the other day. I'm not a fan of a lot of these coordinators in the league right now. You know, I feel like these people get a lot of credit based off coaching great players instead of the scheme they've drawn up. You know, a lot of these coaches say, I'm going to pressure and play man, and you got a bunch of great players that make bad calls look good. So now they get credit for being good coordinators, and they're not. You know, are coordinators that have a lot of variety in their system. Oh man, they run everything. And it's like, but you never see them win a championship because it's the players that have made them look good. So when they don't have the all-star, superstar players, their scheme doesn't look as great. And so you see a lot of those teams struggle. And that's the same thing you saw here. I think Zimmer should have, you know, him being a defensive coach, I think he should have kicked the field goal and trusted his defense. You know, they got enough playmakers. They were putting pressure on Russell all day. But you got to give credit for Russell walking the ball down the field, you know, converting, I think, 2 fourth downs, maybe 3, to win that game.
You saw Russell as a baby. He's a teammate of yours, right? You got to see the whole thing. He's never gotten an MVP vote. He never has. He would have gotten one for me if I didn't get kicked out of that club. I did get kicked out of that club for being a little late with my ballots a couple of times, because PFF had him as the MVP a season ago, which was interesting, but he would have gotten my vote last year. So as you've watched him over the years, what would you say about him? What would you say is different about him? How has he grown? He doesn't have the Legion of Boom anymore to rely on. As he saw the other night, he had to go win games by outscoring people. The Seattle defense has definitely been struggling this year. What would you say about his game?
I'd say he's been more efficient. You know, he's been really, really efficient. But like I said, it's down the stretch that's gonna win the MVP. You know, he's played fantastic. And it's really the main only reason they're 5-0. You know, you've got guys playing well on defense. You got Bobby Wagner. You got KJ Wright, both playing fantastic. But outside of that, you know, Jamal Adams was playing fantastic before he got injured. But they're struggling. I think they're giving up 400 yards a game. So he's in a shootout every week. But I think the reason that it's been tough for him to get an MVP vote in these last years was because you have to be pretty much the number one offense on the number one team to get the MVP. You know, so if you're not the number one offense in yards and points, like Patrick Mahomes has been, like Lamar Jackson has been, then it's going to be tough to get the votes. You know, it's if you're the main culprit, he's the MVP of Seattle and has been for, I don't know, the last 4 or 5 years. But that's not necessarily the MVP of the league. every year. You know, you have to be able to carry your team to the one seed. And if your team is the one seed, then you usually get it. That's how it's worked for a number of years. I don't know when the last time the MVP has been somebody not on the number one seed.
All right, before we go on, let's take a minute here to talk about my friends at Western and Southern. Love those guys. You know, life is really always full of questions like, what would happen to my family if something happened to me? Am I saving enough for retirement? And is now the right time to start thinking about life insurance? Just to name a few. And no one should have to settle for answers to life-altering questions that involve any gray areas or leaving things to chance. And with Western and Southern, you won't have to. They're backed by over 130 years of experience gathering insights, building strategies, and helping customers choose the right solutions. And together we can look ahead to leave the unknown behind. Western and Southern Financial Group, life insurance, retirement, and investments.
Compensated endorser, products issued by member companies of Western and Southern Financial Group, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Do you watch Seattle now? I mean, when they're on television, can you just watch them and be a fan? Can you watch them without the emotion of knowing the history and all that you've gone through and championships?
Honestly, I don't watch a lot of football, period, outside of the film, you know, you got to watch. So I don't watch as a fan. So I don't catch Sunday night footballs. You know, I was watching Lakers.
Killed the ratings. That's what I'm talking about. It's guys like you.
but you know, that's why you got the film on your iPad. You know, you could catch it where it's not the broadcast, and you just catch the all 22. You see guys play well. You see the mistakes. You see what happened. But I usually don't catch the Thursday, Sunday. You know, I let the fans have it, and you know, I try to enjoy my shows.
You're hanging out with your kids at that point. Right, I got right. It. You know, what's one of the interesting discussions in the NFL is, how much do running backs really matter? You know, the poor running backs have taken a beating here lately. Like, they can't get paid. They're not significant. Even PFF will tell you that, you know, it's more about the offensive line blocking, and it's the most replaceable position of all the positions and all that kind of stuff. But never did I think that I would see Carolina go 0-2, and then when Christian McCaffrey got hurt, go 3-0 and start looking like a team that could potentially challenge in one of the toughest divisions in football out there. Any explanation other than your guy Mike Davis taking over and tearing up back there?
Man, you got to give a lot of credit to Mike Davis. You got to give a lot of credit to Carolina staff. But I think it allows your offense to be more dynamic when you don't focus on one guy getting every touch. You know, as a defense preparing for Christian McCaffrey versus preparing for an offense that doesn't have him, I would say it's a bit more difficult, not because Christian McCaffrey isn't the great dynamic player he is, but it's because it's predictable. You know where the ball is going, whether he lines up here. You know, even when they use him as a decoy, it's almost predictable because you can say, hey, he's the decoy, ball has to go here now. When he's not there, then it's less predictable. Then I think you open it up for Teddy Bridgewater to be more dynamic. You don't say, hey, Teddy, look for Christian, get him the ball. You say, Teddy, get us the first down. You know, whether it's chucking it down to Mike Davis, whether it's throwing it to Robbie Anderson, you know, who's had a really good season for them and really established himself as a number one receiver for them. I think that's where it's changed. It's because they haven't had to focus. And it, like you said, it's sad for the running back because they are really – really, really beat up position. Like, they take a beating in general physically every game, you know, whether they take 25 carries, 20 carries, 19, they take a beating, and they're just underappreciated in this league. And this is another case of, you know, the argument against them.
All right, I'm going to throw a couple of young quarterbacks at you. I don't know how much you've seen of these two, but Justin Herbert last night came out with his just blazing, jumps out to a big lead in the first half of that game. And Josh Allen has the Buffalo Bills undefeated as of the time that we're doing this podcast right now. A little bit of the same kind of guy. Would you agree? Both of them, big, strong arm, physical, can run it when they need to. Little bit of the same kind of guys. Your impression on those two guys?
I think they've been fantastic. I mean, there's not much you can say about them. Obviously, Justin Herbert has had some tough losses against some tough teams. They had Kansas City and then just lost to the Saints. But I don't think it's by any fault of his. You know, he's played fantastic. Obviously, he had a few miscues, but he's a rookie quarterback and playing against two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I mean, two of the greatest quarterbacks. I mean, he played Mahomes toe-to-toe. He played Drew toe-to-toe. And I think the same can be said of Josh Allen. He's just been dynamic. Last year, I think he depended on his feet a little more than his arm, you know, because he didn't trust what he saw. But I think the game has slowed down for him substantially, considerably, and he's made the decisions accordingly. He's freaking shredded people. I think he's thrown for 400 a few times, thrown for over 300 pretty much every game this season. And so you got to give those guys credit. But it's about consistency. Like, can they keep doing it? Can they keep doing it once people have figured out their system? You know, great quarterbacks are able to do it even once, you know, people have enough tape on them to get a bead on their reads and their understanding. Then they're able to adjust and evolve, continue evolving throughout the season. So I look forward to seeing if both of these quarterbacks can continue to evolve and elevate their game.
All right, tell me about the Lakers. I want to hear. Give me your version. Tell me about the Lakers. Go ahead. Just lay it all on me and come on.
Yeah, you know, just number 17. You know, it's as a Lakers fan, you know, it's been a long drought in between championships. It's been 10 years, and obviously with the devastating loss of Kobe Bryant, you know, we needed this. We needed this pick me up. You know, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, Rajon Rondo, they all played fantastic in a playoff. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, you know, played well in the finals and deserves credit. You know, now everybody, when the Lakers win it, everybody's like, it's an asterisk. But if anybody else would have won it, it would have been like, oh, yeah, this is perfect. This is a dynamic season. Look at the Lakers. They blew it again, yada, yada, yada. But when the Lakers win it, they're like, oh, it's an asterisk. It was the bubble. Well, nobody said it was an asterisk when the Bucks got put out. When the Clippers got it put out, you know, it's just when the Lakers win it. You know, if the Bucks would have won it, they would have been like, look at Giannis, the MVP, when it should have been LeBron. And it should have been LeBron for the Defensive Player of the Year. But that's a story for a different day.
Give me LeBron standing now. Three different teams to win a championship, right? He's had help in each place. But where do you put him on the scale? You know, they got to go Kobe. You got to go Michael. Where is he on the scale now?
You're going to hate my answer because I'm one of those guys who hates to try to compare through eras. You know, if you told me Jordan and LeBron played together and they played head to head and I had to pick, then I'd pick.
Well, then it'd be easy because then one would win and one would lose. So that's not, you can't do that. You got to have these stupid questions or there wouldn't be talk radio. There wouldn't be podcasts. Richard, come on, loosen up. We're paying you a lot of money here. Give me who's the greatest basketball player of all time.
Kobe Bryant, Kobe Bean Bryant, rest in peace, is the best basketball player of all time.
My dad played basketball for Adolph Rupp at the University of Kentucky, won a national championship. He was the biggest Kobe Bryant fan of all time. And he said it had nothing to do with the way that he played on offense. He said for a guy to work that hard on the defensive end, just blew me away. I love watching him play defense. And when I was at the Olympics, I would go when Coach Krzyzewski was there with the dream team. I was working for NBC and I would go to the practice. Not that I had anything to do, but I had a credential and they let me in. So I'm a practice junkie. I like to watch how do coaches interact and get the most out of their players and all that kind of stuff. And actually, it was really interesting because Krzyzewski, whenever he would call him up in a huddle, he would not talk louder than this in the huddle. And those guys would be leaning in and they're paying attention. I mean, the greatest of the greats in the NBA, right?
Right.
But when they did a water break, this is the part that stuck with me. And I tell kids this one all the time. When they did a water break, everybody went over and got some water. Kobe Bryant had a guy who fed him as many three-point passes as he could. He just shot threes the whole time everybody else was on a water break and didn't even blink. Then he went back to practice and da-da-da, and he went about his business. But the great ones, they practice, right? I remember, what was the Larry Bird line? Something about, you know, they asked him about working out or shooting 6 hours a day. And he said, my only concern is there's some little kid in Indiana shooting 7 hours a day, right? And the great ones believe in work, and that defined Kobe.
Right. And that's what I appreciated. You know, as a kid growing up, seeing that work ethic, hearing about it, hearing him speak about it, hearing his tenacity, it really inspired me. It inspired me to do more and want more and to fight harder. And that's why I'll always consider him the greatest basketball player, because I mean, there's really nothing that can be done to change my mind, which is unfortunate because I'm biased. You know, LeBron has had a fantastic career and, you know, 16-time All-Star, 4-time Finals MVP, 4-time MVP, 4-time champion, et cetera, et cetera, and deserves all the credit that he'll get. But it's different eras. You know, I feel like when Kobe was playing and in the time he played, he's the greatest basketball player to play during his time. I think during this time, this is LeBron's era. LeBron's era has been the longest, longer than Jordan's, longer than Kobe's. I mean, he's in year 17 and still getting Finals MVPs and should have got a regular season MVP and got another championship, another All-Star, another, you know, I think Kobe, I mean, still got All-Stars, but Jordan didn't make it to year 17. And so you got to give him credit for that. But like you said, Kobe's defense, his tenacity, the things that he brought that changed the structure of his team really, really would. That's it for me.
I would have loved to have had Kobe here to talk about the social justice movement and what was going on in this country right now. I got to interview him a few times at the Olympics. He was a remarkably patriotic guy. He really was. And he spoke about this country in glowing terms. I also know that he would have been very uncomfortable with a lot of what was going on. I just wonder, I really miss his voice in this time. It would have been fantastic to hear him.
Yeah, it would have been powerful. It would have been another powerful advocate that could potentially bring people together. You know, I mean, this time it's so divisive. You know, everything is divisive. Everything is one side or other. It's black or white. It's Republican or Democrat, you know, and it's sad. It's really sad because, you know, through just about every election, you know, that I've been alive in these short 32 years, you know, there's politics, you know, there's Democratic and Republican, but it's never been this egregious, you know, this far of a disparity between the politics, and almost to the point where it's not really about the politics. The politics are almost masking racism. And that's where it's getting troubling for me. And, you know, guys talking about they're going to start a civil war if one guy loses. And, you know, I don't think it's ever been to that point. I don't think this country's ever been to the point where somebody's talking about starting a war because somebody loses. You know, you lose because you didn't get the votes, you know, because the majority of the country wants the other guy, you know. And for somebody to say that, I think, you know, obviously they should be in jail, but there's not enough people condemning it, you know, and that speaks to where our country is at this point.
A very strange time indeed. Can you remember where you were when Kobe passed, when you got that news?
I can remember exactly where I was. I was on a plane, an hour into a plane to Miami to the Super Bowl.
Really?
Yep. John Lynch came up to me and told me Kobe Bryant has crashed in a helicopter crash. That's the rumor. It hadn't been confirmed. And that was... I had nothing. I couldn't even believe it. You know, over the years, you know, I had been an admirer of Kobe Bryant, but I had a chance to meet him, you know, become friends with him, you know, exchange numbers. He played my softball game, you know, and became somebody I was able to lean on and have conversations with. When I tore my Achilles, he was the first person to reach out. And, you know, to hear him pass just was unbelievably sad news. You know, it was, you know, you understand that you're excited to be going to the Super Bowl, but, you know, this is a game we play. You know, that's life or death. You know, he has a family, he has kids that he'll never see again. They'll never see their father. And so that hit me differently. You know, it's still dealing with it. You know, I still can't see, really watch any videos of him. You know, I used to watch his videos all the time, and, you know, just to hype me up, just to, you know, reignite the fire for myself. But I you know, I still getting past that.
Always a pleasure, my friend. It's you're interesting beyond your football years, so I appreciate you showing up. I love the pergola. Go say hello to the kids and watch a little more Sunday Night Football, will you?
I will, just to hear your voice, because I'm not getting enough on these Tuesdays.
I'll see you next week.
All right, see you next week.
All right, George, now it's time for my weekly education on picking football games. Of course, you're the guru, you're the expert, but I understand that the DraftKings Sportsbook and their top-rated sportsbook app now has a tremendous deal with PFF, that you no longer have to drive across the state lines into Indiana with your mask over your face and do all those things you used to do, because the PFF promo code DraftKings Sportsbook app, it's incredible. And it's not just football, it's golf, it's soccer, you name the sport, you can go over there and have some fun with this sportsbook app. What is this?
Yeah, even baseball, they're still playing that. It's really simple. You just download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the promo code PFF. And then when you sign up, you get up to $1,000 sign up bonus. So it's a pretty good deal. Use promo code PFF.
Do it more than once. No, that's it. You could just sign up once.
That's the whole deal. I've tried that.
I've got three names. I could just keep shifting.
In addition to trying that, I've also tried different states. That's why I ended up in Indiana. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It's a long story. but it's only for a limited time, so you want to go make that happen. You just have to download the app. You got to be 21 or older. We all know that. New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania. The bonus is comprised of a first deposit bonus and then a first bet match, each up to $500. Deposit bonus requires a 25-time playthrough. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And you know this, if you have a gambling problem, best thing to do, call 1-800-GAMBLER. In the state of Indiana, it's 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
All right, let's get back to the show. All right, here we go with my favorite part of the program. DraftKings is now our sponsor. How about that? So we actually have a reason to pick these games against the spread and do all that. So if we're going to pick games against the spread, you got to bring in the guru, right? You got to have the guy from his from the lovely flower garden in Southern California to put the finishing touch
on
it.
He's rubbing it in our faces, really.
What? And there it is. That is the prediction now. That is the prediction.
Right here.
Now tell people why you have the owl in your backyard.
Well, because we've had a bird invasion, and these aren't little robins or songbirds. We have a crow and a vulture invasion. So the only way to stop that is to go to your nearby gas station and get one of these for about 28 cents, and this will take care of that. So that's my security force in my backyard here in SoCal.
So the vultures are no longer circling over your pool at this point?
Not at this particular moment, but stand by, because something could happen before this segment is done, and then we'd really have a scoop.
So let's figure out whether or not Al really knows anything about betting on football, because there's always a mild reference at the end of some games about some people may care about whether or not this field goal is made or not. And I never know what he's talking about.
Of course not.
But other people seem to have some idea. So, George, get us started here. What are the big games of the week this week?
Yeah, last week we didn't really have any. There were a lot of kind of games. This week there's a bunch.
Big games.
Some big ones. And let's start with Cleveland-Pittsburgh on DraftKings Sportsbook. Pittsburgh favored by 3.5.
Al, your initial
thought.
Yeah, don't
you're
think
asking me.
Yes.
And by the way, you do know exactly what I'm talking about every time I bring that into play. It's amazing how often the over and under comes into play on our games, and very often it's like you're only a half point, off. Either it's a horrible beat, or it's nirvana. You came out of nowhere to win your bet.
But
Cleveland, Pittsburgh. I think that we haven't seen either team. I wish we know so much more if we've had the team, but we haven't, and we haven't seen Cleveland since week three last year. Pittsburgh, we had a couple of times down the stretch last year, as I recall. I'm going with George on this one. He's the man. He knows what's happening here. What do you think?
Let's talk about Baker. Now, Baker Mayfield supposedly has the rib injury, right?
Yeah.
And the x-rays came back negative. Let me tell you what that means. That means nothing. I've had so many cracked ribs in my career. And you know what they do? They take you in for an x-ray, which is utterly worthless, because that you cannot see cracked ribs. You know when you can see cracked ribs? A week and a half later, when it starts to calcify, then you take an x-ray, and which they've done with me several times. They're like, oh, we must have missed it on the first one. I go, no, because it didn't calcify yet.
Yeah.
Because they don't want you to think you have cracked ribs, because they want you to go play. So right now they went out, they took x-rays of Baker, and they said, oh, now there's nothing on there. And in probably a week, you'll see the little calcification mm-hmm. where he did have a cracked rib. So he's going to be hurting. He'll play. But when you play against that Pittsburgh defense, and he's not playing that well, Baker's not playing that well, and that Pittsburgh defense is playing great, I don't care what the point spread is, I'll take Pittsburgh.
Yeah, so here was my thought on this. As you said, Baker Mayfield's grading worse than he did last year. And they just beat the Colts. They're at the top of the market here. You know, everyone loves Cleveland. They want to hop on the bandwagon. Pittsburgh, they're blitzing 50% of the time. They're getting pressure 10% more than any other team. I'm with you. I just think that, like, this is the time Baker Mayfield crumbles.
And I love the way Chris says a cracked rib means nothing. But what if you're throwing it and not receiving it, right? It's one thing when you were getting your x-rays pre-calcification, by the way, which I learned from you. Just I didn't realize you had gone to medical school in Gainesville as well as as engineering school.
The more you can do.
But I don't know what that means. I really don't. And I think George makes a great point in that Cleveland is kind of like, you know, it's a great story. A lot of people want to see the Cleveland Browns, who have not done well, obviously, for a long, long time, do well. And I think that factors into more people, you know, going in that direction. But you guys both make great points, and that's why I'm sitting here just observing and listening and then putting my bet down.
All I know is the best line just slid right by both of us. Al's Al. I had never put it together like that. Al's Al. I think that's fantastic. The rest of my life, I'll have that name for that Al.
I told you this story. I mean, when I was doing the Cincinnati Reds back in prehistoric times, like 1971, and RIP Joe Morgan, by the way, great guy, and it's so sad. But when I was doing the Reds back in 71, so in those years, you know, no internet, no Federal Express, no anything. So you'd get, you know, snail mail. And we're in spring training, and we come back, and, you know, there's a stack of mail in the office addressed to me. And I can't wait to open it up to see how great I'm doing. And the first letter I look at has all kinds of, like, stuff you couldn't say even on a podcast on the outside of the envelope, much less on television. And I opened it up, and it's a letter destroying me completely. But it's from Corbin, Kentucky, and the salutation is, Dear Al, DeerOwl. And that's when I knew I was in big trouble. But it got better from there.
Why does it always have to be a Kentucky guy, man? You always got to make fun of Kentuckians. You know what I mean?
I'm not making fun of Kentucky. I'm just, you know, I'm a trained journalist, and I want to get the facts right. And the postmark did say Corbin, Kentucky.
It's being a snooty Californian.
You know, I don't make stuff up.
Right?
You know that.
He is. Which is like, George is a snooty Californian, too. So you got kindred spirits here.
I'm going to gang up on you.
Green Bay and Tampa Bay. Now, Al, we have seen the Green Bay Packers. Very impressive, right? Would you agree? Very impressive. Tampa Bay
they
had a lot of people hurt Thursday night, maybe too short a period of time for that game, and they didn't really look good. They didn't look sharp. Chicago looked better. What do you think? Is Green Bay for real? Every time I've watched Green Bay play so far this year, just razor sharp. I mean, not just a little bit sharp. They have been razor sharp on offense.
Yeah, and I mean, you got receivers coming out of nowhere. The tight end Tanyan, and we've got three touchdowns in a prior game. You know, it's funny. I look at this game and I think about the evolvement of the league and what's happened over a bunch of years. Obviously, a lot of years. But Pete Axtell, who was a writer. And I think he was one of the first guys who predicted games on, I think, NBC on a pregame show many, many years ago. So when Green Bay and Tampa Bay were both terrible, he called that game the Bay of Pigs. So that Green Bay-Tampa Bay game has come a long way since the late Pete Axtell was making his picks. I mean, Green Bay looks great. They look fantastic. The game is where? Georgia, I forgot.
It's in Tampa. In Tampa, this is flipped. So Green Bay, now the favorite. They're a 2.5-point favorite. Here's what I keep coming back to is, like, you watch that Thursday night game in Chicago, and Tampa Bay just made so many errors. I mean, just, like, all over the place. The one that everyone remembers is the fourth down, you know, disaster. Oh. But I don't know. Everyone loves Green Bay. I'm curious if you guys think they're better than Seattle.
I'm going to say yes right now. I think they have the potential to be better on defense. Now, when Adams comes back for Seattle, maybe that flip-flops back the other way. Seattle can't get to the passer. I mean, they did a little bit in that game the other night against Minnesota, but Minnesota has this, you know, really tough way to go at guard there. So I personally feel like two great quarterbacks, the two front runners for MVP, so that's kind of a wash.
Yeah.
I think Green Bay has a better chance, I think, on defense, just because maybe they can get after the quarterback a little better.
I agree. I think that, the Seattle – defense, I mean, got shredded the other night on the ground. I mean, Minnesota ran at will. They did make the stop when they had to make the stop, which should let Russell Wilson come in and lead that incredible drive. But Green Bay's defense is better. This is a very interesting game. And, you know, what's the weather forecast going to be like in Tampa Bay? A lot of times, not that it's chilly in Green Bay, maybe later in the season it would be a little bit different. But a lot of those teams, you know, come down to Florida, to Chris's beloved Florida, and it's hot and it's humid and it's sticky, and that sometimes makes a difference.
86 boys, and sunny.
But the bottom line is, what do we know? We're providing content right now. That's what it amounts to.
Here's what I'll say about this. You guys both clearly really like the Packers as a team. I think America loves the Packers. It's easy to love them. And the last time people saw Tom Brady, it was him forgetting the down. I kind of like the idea of betting Tom Brady, you know, and taking Tom Brady when everyone is kind of
when he's the whipping boy.
Yeah,
that's not a bad strategy. How many times has he lost two games in a row? Do you have any idea?
Not often.
Yeah, not often. So, all right, one more, and then we're gonna let Al get out of here. He's going to play some golf.
We saved the best for last, though.
This is an interesting game. So Arizona at Dallas. We have the great Andy Dalton taking over for Dak Prescott here. And I first of all, Al, you know the Jones family probably as well as anybody. What do you think happens next year? Of course, he's on, you know, he's tagged this year. What do you think happens with Dak next year?
I'll say this. I mean, we know the Jones family. You know the Jones family very well as too. And we've been down there a lot. I think Jerry will do the right thing. I don't know what he's going to do. It's a hard choice. We all know that. I mean, if you're running a football team and you have this particular situation, you don't know how anybody's going to react. But I will say, you know, I believe Jerry is and always has been, and that family's been very principled. And they know that Dak has meant so much to that franchise. And he's such a class act. And he's a great quarterback. And hopefully he'll come back 100%. So it's something that will be discussed I'm sure, up one side and down the other, in the off season and for the rest of this season, but I think he always does the right thing by his people, and that's why, I'd say 98% of those people who played for Dallas, they have great respect and admiration and love for Jerry, and a couple of other guys are going, you got to take care of your players. He does. I think Jerry Jones takes as good care of his players as any owner I know.
Takes pretty good care of announcers sometimes too.
he takes care of people. He does. He does. And you and I both know. I mean, Jerry gets slings and arrows because he's out there. You know, he's in the spotlight. He's a famous man. But I have a great deal of admiration and respect for him because I think he's a very principled man.
So let me ask you this then, because here's the question that's going around. Dak Prescott is out, but Andy Dalton is in. This isn't like, Trevor Siemian coming in here. This is a guy that's gone to the playoffs before. So Dallas was favored by 3. Look ahead with Dak. 3.5. Now they're 2.5 3-point underdogs. Andy Dalton won that game. Like, he made some nice throws. Do you guys think that this offense takes a massive step back with Andy Dalton? Should they really be an underdog at home to the Cardinals?
No. I mean, to me, this team's about those three receivers and Zeke at this point, right? I mean, that's what they're going to be. And can Andy Dalton deliver the ball to those guys? As long as the protection holds up. I mean, remember what Andy Dalton faced in Cincinnati over all these years.
Yeah, we're seeing it
like
again.
Like, no protection, right? I mean, Joe Burrow's getting a taste of it right now. So, do I think Andy Dalton can win, especially a game at home, and there'll be raw emotion out there, and the team will want to win one for Dak, and he'll probably, I don't know if he'll show up on the sideline or not, but maybe be in the booth or box or somewhere up there. So, I mean, if I had to pick the game, I would pick Dallas.
I think I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a wide disparity from being a 3-point favorite to what, a 3.5-point underdog. I'm not sure I understand that either. But if you see Roger Staubach warming up on the sideline before the game, keep me abreast of how that line moves, would you?
What about Romo?
Romo was there, you know. Romo was there.
How weird was that? Garrett was there. And
hey,
Romo,
like
happened
Chris,
to be calling
like Chris
the game.
Said, Romo's looking to play on Monday night. You know, he's looking to announce and he's looking to play on Monday night. Who knows?
Al, how did you get the job as the Olympic announcer?
Well, I was on a staff at ABC. I mean, this is the Mount Rushmore of announcers at that point. Howard Cosell, Jim McKay, Keith Jackson, Chris Schenkel, Bill Fleming was there, Frank Gifford. So, you know, I'm the new kid, and I came in 3 years prior to that. And somebody had to do hockey in Lake Placid. So, you know, McKay had never done a game. He was going to do the host role in figure skating. Frank Gifford and his buddy Bob Beatty, all they wanted to do is the après ski scene. So they were sent up the mountain to cover alpine skiing and then, you know, hang around all night and have fun. Keith Jackson actually got the assignment that I wanted. I wanted to do speed skating because the big star of those Olympics was going to be Eric Heiden, who, you know, was expected to win 5 gold medals, which he did. So Keith got that. And then I got hockey. And when I got the assignment, I got it because I had done one game. I had done one. And nobody else had done any.
He was zero. The most experienced hockey announcer with one.
Right. I was most, but also I grew up in New York. And I loved the Rangers. And, you know, hockey's a cult sport, and I love hockey. And I taught Chris everything he knows about hockey.
That's true.
And the thing was, I could explain icing and offside. In those years, that was important. People didn't know what that was.
I still don't know what that is.
The blue line and the whole thing. So I was able to get that assignment. The good thing about hockey in the Winter Olympics is you're inside. You don't have to get outside the elements. So I was pretty happy about that. And then, of course, I was fairly ecstatic when the thing ended to think that, you know, 40 years later, the folks are still talking about it. That was a one-off, but it was a wonderful one-off.
Did you know when you made that call, were you like right after it, you were like, oh, yeah, that was it?
Nope.
No bat flip, nothing?
Nope. Because I've told the story before. Ken Dryden, my partner, and I, we were walking over to the arena. And I said to him, I said, man, I just hope in the middle of the second period, it's only like 3-1. So at least it sounds close, because my fear was that the Soviets were so much better. They would be leading, you know, 6-0 at the end of the first period. And so when the first period ended 2-2, we go, whoa, boy, you know, this is about as good as it's going to get. And then we held them to one goal in the second. It was 3-2. So who knows? And then, of course, the tying goal and the winning goal come within a minute and a half apart in the third period. And then the last 10 minutes are just completely crazy. The Soviets are skating insanely short shifts. And the U.S. is now not controlling the game, not dominating the game, but in a way controlling those last 10 minutes. But Jim Craig still had to make save after save. At the end of the game, I couldn't even remember exactly what I said because I was so astonished. And those words, people said, well, did you script them? I go, script them? I thought the U.S. was going to lose 10-0. I've always felt, let it come out of your heart. And somebody wrote that was kind of like the 9-year-old in me coming out. And that's as good an explanation as any. I mean, I was like astonished. And the place is going crazy. And we're on a kind of a platform that's shaking up and down. And it was all I could do to concentrate. And then those words just came out of my heart and away we went.
Speaking of words, can you paraphrase a bit of the story, the motivational speech of the coach when they were about to give up the gold medal at the end?
Well, Herb Brooks was the coach, and everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people think the Soviet game won the gold medal. It did not. The U.S. still had to beat Finland on Sunday morning, incredibly enough. And had they lost that game, they would not have won the gold medal. And at the end of the second period, Finland leads 2-1. Now, Finland's, they were a good team, you know, the third or fourth best team in the tournament coming in, and probably ranked ahead of the United States. So they were no pushovers, but trailing 2-1. So now you've got 20 minutes to go. There's no overtime in the Olympics. You got the third period coming up, and Herb Brooks, before the team went out on the ice for the third period, just stood there by the door, looked back at the team, and said, "If you lose this game, you will take it to your grave." And of course, he had an adjective in front of grave.
Yes, he did.
Figure out what that one was.
And they came out and fired away, and that was that.
That's the speech that I give to teams that are blowing it on Sunday from the comfort of this very fine building.
I'll bet that phrase has been uttered a few times around here.
I've got to figure it out.
Absolute sure.
I gave it to the Bengals, actually, this past week, because when we talked about last week's games, both you and I thought the Bengals were going to figure something out. They apparently haven't seen a blitz.
Before you go play golf, give George how you tell your partners exactly how hard to hit the putts. Let's see if our boy, if the boy Wonder over here can figure this one out.
Okay, so we were there. I created this situation. We got flies going on. Right, hold on, one second. Let me get this all up here. Get rid of these flies. Okay, so we had a caddy, and instead of telling me, you know, what how hard I should hit it, and the way caddies would normally say, he would say things like, "All right, this putt is two cups on the right, and it is." Logan Mankins. This putt is a cup and a half on the left, and it is Emmett Smith. What do you think he meant, George?
Man. I'm guessing if he said a running back, he meant you want to hit it kind of firm.
Good guess, but wrong. Damn. The only guy who cracked the code, and I'll get to that in a second, but he would come up with a number of the player. So when I had Bob Kraft was out there one day, and he had Logan Mankins, and he loved the way that was positioned. And then some former Cowboy was out there, and Emmett Smith, so hit it 22%. You know, Logan Mankins was 60 or 70 something. So in other words, that's how hard you wanted to hit it. You know, Donald Driver, you'd hit the putt 80%, and the caddy was a big Packer fan. So Peyton Manning is out there with me about 5 or 6 years ago, and he cracked the code by the second hole, right? And he wanted to know if we've ever had a putt for him. So we get to the 16th hole, and the caddy says, "All right, it's two cups on the right, Peyton." And Manning goes, "Yeah, finally." And I go, "Not you, Walter."
All right, brother. Have fun, man.
Aloha. All right, baby.